Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by. Welcome to the conference call on the third quarter results of 2013 of DSM. Throughout today's presentation, all participants will be in a listen-only mode. After the presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To register for questions, you may dial star one at any time. If any participant has difficulty in hearing the conference, please press 00 on your push-button phone. Now, I would like to turn the call over to Mr. Betten. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the conference call on the third quarter results that we published a little over 15 minutes ago. Sitting here with me is Mr. Rolf-Dieter Schwalb, Chief Financial Officer and member of the DSM Managing Board. He will elaborate on the results and after that, answer your questions. This call will last 30 minutes. As a reminder, I'm obliged to say that today's presentation can contain forward-looking statements, and in that regard, I would like to direct you to our disclaimer about forward-looking statements as published on our website and in our press releases. With that, I would like to hand over the call to Rolf-Dieter Schwalb.
Thank you, Herman. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this conference call on the 2013 third quarter results. I will keep my opening comments short to allow for as much time for questions as possible. DSM maintained its positive momentum in Q3 with a 27% increase in EBITDA, despite an ongoing challenging macroeconomic environment. Profitability increased in all our business clusters, despite the initial impact from adverse currency movements. Nutrition continued its good performance, notwithstanding some headwinds that emerged towards the end of Q3 and which continued in Q4. Material Sciences also delivered solid performance with 27% higher profits. Volumes increased in all business groups of our Performance Materials cluster, with DSM Dyneema delivering double-digit growth. Finally, there is no change to our full-year outlook as given 5 weeks ago at our Capital Markets Day, which you can find in full in the press release. Overall, based on current economic assumptions, DSM continues to expect to move towards its 2013 EBITDA target of 1.4 billion. The combination of the factors mentioned in the full outlook statement could, however, result in an EBITDA for 2013 slightly below 1.35 billion. Now I would like to open the lines for questions.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will start the question and answer session now. To be registered for questions, you may press star one. Please go ahead. The first question is from Mr. Edwin van der Schoot, Telegraaf. Go ahead please, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Schwalb. Good morning, Herman. I think there's not a lot of us here, so I'll ask one or two questions, and then I'll hold the line and see if there's anybody else. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the currency movements. We see that you write you've lost 4% of your EBITDA margins on currency. You're not the only company to report so from Europe in the third quarter. My question would be to you, Mr. Schwalb, as a CFO, in a world which continues to be vacant of one dominant valuta, is this not something that might happen more often, and how do you manage these risks, and how do you hedge them in order to prevent these things from happening again?
Okay. On the currency, yeah. The currencies always move, you're absolutely right. It's even difficult to say whether the current situation is a strengthening of the euro or a weakening of some other currencies. We see the development euro between dollar and euro between Brazilian real or some of the Asian currencies getting worse in the sense for us, worse that the euro is getting stronger. That has an impact on our EBITDA. By the way, the 4% is the impact on the sales in terms of translation of last year local currency sales to this year local currency sales. That is 4%. The EBITDA effect for the third quarter relative to the average rates of the first half year was 6 million euro. Now, how do we protect ourselves? I think at the end, there is no ultimate protection. What we do is we do a hedging strategy. We followed that already for many years, and that is a risk management strategy. We basically don't speculate. We say we hedge half of the currency exposure for next year of the main currencies which are relevant for us. That is not all in the world. It has to be a certain size to make it meaningful. What we do And it's not about speculation. You don't know whether this is at that moment a good decision in the sense of you will beat the market or not, but that is not the objective. That cannot be the objective. The objective is to give for that half a certain planning certainty for all our business decisions. And for the other half, we let it go.
So if you look for the ASM, which are the important currencies, I reckon the Swiss franc as well?
Yeah, the important currencies for us are, or currency relations, are euro-dollar. Then Swiss franc to dollar is also important because our larger nutrition business is based in Switzerland. Then the British pound to the Swiss franc is also relevant because of a factory in the United Kingdom for vitamins. And then the Japanese yen is also relevant, both against Swiss franc and against euro.
Okay, so and these are the five that you hedge half?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Of course, that might change in the future. After we bought now Tortuga in Brazil, maybe at some point we have to add hedging on the Brazilian currency. Of course, China is big for us. When that currency becomes more... open to the world, then there might also be a need. But at the moment, it's these five.
Okay. Thank you.
The next question is from Mr. Bart Koster, Dow Jones. Go ahead, please, sir.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. You were talking about, Mr. Schwab, about some headwinds in the nutrition business, which is continuing in the fourth quarter. Can you elaborate a bit on that, please?
Yeah, we talked about these at our Capital Markets Day end of September, where we had seen it coming in the last weeks, basically around September. And those are mainly next to the currencies, which I already discussed on the previous question, two topics in animal one and in human nutrition one. Let me start with human nutrition. Here the main topic has been slightly reducing, sluggish, however you want to call it, demand in a fish oil-based omega-3. The reason for that is, and I have to go back a year, because this fish oil is basically harvested in Peru twice a year, and the last winter season harvest was very low. That drove the raw material prices up significantly, and we passed basically this raw material prices on to our customers, and the customers did the same to their customers. But at the end of the day, the consumers and dietary supplements, especially in fish oil-based omega-3, didn't like it so much that the prices on the shelf went up too much. And then they went down in taking some of these dietary supplements. Now, that will normally level out again. It will also come back because, generally speaking, the behavior, the pattern of demand does not really change. If people want to take that because of the health benefits, they will also continue to do so. But there is at least an effect now, and that has continued into Q4. In animal nutrition, we have a bit of a more fragile business, and the fragile business there leads to some price pressure, which we saw again in end of Q3. And which also continues into Q4. The most prominent material to mention here is vitamin E. That's basically the most important headwinds which we saw. But there is, of course, a very general one, which you also see in this results season. When you look at quarter results of food companies in general, then you see especially the what you can call the A brands, the most important brands. They also report some difficulties in general in food demand. But in the long run, I think the underlying drivers for our nutrition business, increasing population, aging population, urbanization, they of course continue. And in general, we are not changing our eating habits.
Okay, thank you. Another question. Can you talk a bit about the progress of the caprolactam business?
Because as we have said before, I can repeat our general statement. We are looking into ways to reduce the exposure to the merchant market, and as long as we don't have something to report, we cannot discuss progress. this is just too uncertain in these kinds of projects, how they move and when they move and to what end result they move, that we never comment on progress in between. When it's done, and then we let you know. And then we probably have a call like this.
Okay, but that means that you are still looking for options to divest
I would say it's a bit more, we never said divest, but it's a bit more than looking for. We are working on options.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Ms. Sarah Webb, Reuters. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Actually, I wanted to ask about the question, the issue that was just raised. What sort of various options are you exploring for the pharmaceutical products and for the caprolactam business? Can you give some idea of the range of options you might consider?
Yeah, not really. I mean, to the caprolactam situation, I really don't want to add more. But we have discussed that in the past. It's too wide a range of options to really go in detail here. And in the pharma business, we have been clear what we want. We have already published a while ago that we want to go for partnership. What exact form a partnership might take, that again, I have to say, wait and see. We will of course let everybody know when we are there. We know that in the first part of pharma, the partnership which we found was a simple, straightforward 50-50 joint venture with Sinochem, which is now running for 2 years. And in the other part of pharma, we just need to wait until something is done.
So why is it taking so long? What's holding it up?
Yeah, what holds it up? I think at the end of the day, it's always around creating value for the company. If we were to say, okay, here is our pharma business for 1 euro, whoever wants to have it, I think we would have a partnership today. But of course, that is not the most wise thing to do for the company and for our pharma business, which is a very good business in itself. So I think this just needs time to find the right partner so that both parties think this is a good idea.
And it could be anywhere in the world, or are you focusing on particular geographic regions?
No, basically, it could be anywhere in the world, although we have, of course, a very strong footprint in the US and in Europe, and we need to have a partner which either already is or is willing with us together to go also to Asia.
And for the caprolactam business, where are you looking, anywhere or a particular region?
No, we have a global business, so we basically need to look at this on a global scale. We have a business, we have manufacturing units also in the US, here in the Netherlands, and also in China. And the Capro situation in terms of volatility, margins, demand, supply is affecting all three units.
So just to be clear, for pharma, the ideal partner is one that can take you, that can strengthen your position in Asia, is that right?
Or that we, together with the partner, see a good capability to move to Asia.
Mm, okay, thank you.
We alone feel too small for that.
Okay, thank you.
The next question is from Mr. Andrew Noel, Bloomberg. Go ahead, please, sir.
Good morning, Rolf Dieter, Herman.
Hi
there. My question's on omega 3, and some of your competitors are getting excited about the Delaware court hearing that may open the way for a Lavazza generic drug. How are you positioning yourselves there, or indeed are you? That's just the first one.
Well, we are not in the pharma area for omega 3. We produce great with a purity up to maybe 60-70%, but not in the 90s as you need it with a completely different technology, and that's where Pronova is active. So that is, we are basically focusing on dietary supplements and on food and beverage customers.
All right. Was there ever a plan to, because obviously the Martech stuff, couldn't you get that? That's algae based, right? That you could get that to 90%, wouldn't you, or is it?
I don't know what the technology would be for that, this is what it is. I don't know also whether, I mean, you asked whether we ever looked into that. I don't know whether the previous owners looked into that. I mean, we own the two companies for one, respectively, 2 years, 2.5 years, and we are not going that way.
Right, okay. Yeah, that's clear. Thanks. And just in terms of the polymer intermediates, I mean, where do you think we are in the cycle in terms of, demand and pricing and so on?
Well, I just going back, but just for reminding, I mean, we had an extremely good period in 2010 and 11, and then in the first half of year of 2012, it almost collapsed within weeks. How did that come? It came from two sides. It came from massively increased benzene prices and at the same time reduced caprolactam prices because of demand supply. Now, the demand supply situation is, has worsened and is still worsening because there is a lot of new supply has been coming already, but is also announced, may be coming or not, we always have to see, in China. And that additional supply leads to utilization rates, which are somewhere in the mid-80s or so, mid-80%, and that normally drives the prices down and then also the margins. So you could say, yeah, we are at a trough period or a low period in the cycle, but yeah, the question is, when will it be better and why? At the global market is, of course, growing, but to fill the new capacity, we'll need a few years of normal growth to get back into a decent global utilization rate.
I mean, I guess given the options that you're considering in that area, I suppose you're not really banking on any recovery to any of any significance. Otherwise, you wouldn't sort of be choosing now as a moment to explore options there.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it, at least not short term. You could also say maybe that's why it takes longer than some people might have thought.
Mm. So the trick is to get some value
exactly
that will come potentially in the future that people won't recognize. Okay, and I think just on food specialities, there's no specific question there, but if you can give me a feeling of the interest there for DSM, it looks like an interesting area. I haven't caught up with where you are in that, but I did notice that CRH Hansen got together with FMC for the ag side of they obviously see some synergies or crossover there for ag in the ag space. Is that, are you in that? Is that an area that's interesting for you, or just some general?
We're hardly in there, if at all. We're really food specialties, so either it's enzymes, it's culture. So we in some areas we of course compete with Hansen. In other areas we compete with companies like DuPont and Novozymes, and in other areas with yet other companies. So we have savory ingredients there. We have of course our enzymes. Probiotics. So it's a field of, yeah, in some ways you can, some of the materials you could call really ingredients, like they are like in the other part of nutrition. In some areas it's more materials as processing aids of making beer, wine, cheese, and so on.
Mm. It's
an interesting field. I mean, we know it's only roughly 10% of our total nutrition. But it's a very interesting field, the main difference, but we are trying to catch up, is that different from the other part of nutrition, we are in the market number two or three, depending on which part of food specialties you look at, versus being number one in the larger part of our nutrition space. But we also did in last years a few smaller acquisitions in food specialties. Just remind on the Cargill cultures and enzymes business, and the part of Verenium, which we bought 1.5 years ago. So we are really interested in that space.
Right. Okay. And the crossover into ag, is that appropriate for you? Or?
I don't know.
Yeah. No problem. Okay. Thanks.
Very small today. I don't know whether that will be a large focus area.
Thank you.
The next question is from Mr. Vincent Koft, AMP. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, gentlemen. I was wondering whether it was possible for you to give a more concrete subscription about your outlook for nutrition. You expect a clear growth, clearly higher results. Is there any way you can give that a percentage or so? Or
yeah, I think we on nutrition we have very clear targets. We have set already in 2010 that we want to have nutrition develop organic growth to basically growth of economy plus 2%, so GDP plus 2. That currently would be about 5% organic growth. We have also talked about acquisitions, of course, in the past, where we did a lot, and we at the moment don't do really large acquisitions anymore because of integration of what we did. And we have also established a clear margin target in 2010, which is 20 to 23% EBITDA margin. And if I look back now in the last 5 years or so, maybe even almost 6 years by now, there was not a single quarter in nutrition below 20%. So we have made our target margin in every single quarter in the last years, also in this quarter, obviously, at the high end of this range. So we have those two targets. So basically, you could argue we want to keep the margin in this range of 20 to 23% and grow the business faster than it does at the moment, because in the last quarter, the organic growth was 2%. In Q2, it was 3%, so less than 5. We have also indicated in at our Capital Markets Day in September that for Q4, we expect around 5%, maybe even slightly higher, organic growth. So we want to move towards that organic growth. That is the most important development there.
Okay.
That has a lot to do with focusing on operational excellence, integrating acquisitions, delivering the synergies of acquisitions. And that should move us there by keeping the margin in that high range.
Okay. All right. And we also give an outlook for pharma, substantially better results. Can you say something more about that also?
Yeah, substantially better results. That is the outlook which is unchanged since we had an outlook for this year. So
okay.
That we said in February for the year, and we continue to say it. Now, at the moment, if you look at the first 9 months, the EBITDA is 34 million versus 26 last year. That is 30% more. Of course, it is in percentage terms substantial. In absolute numbers, it is the smallest area.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't really have many further questions, so
okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yes.
The next question is from Mr. Edwin van der Schoot, Telegraaf. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, just a short follow-up question. I was wondering about your working capital has increased quite a lot, probably because you did some investments, but I was wondering if you're worried about that. And I saw in your press statement this morning that in the third quarter, you spent 15 million euros on integration costs. I wonder if you could give us an overview of the total cost you have on the integration of, I think, the 10 acquisitions you did since 2009, because I reckon it will be more than 15 million, and you just mentioned we're not going to do any big acquisitions anymore because we're focusing on integration now. So is there a part of the integration cost still to come, or is it the integration of all your acquisitions almost finished? Thank you.
Yeah. Now, I don't have a number for the total integration cost across all acquisitions. The 15 million in this quarter is not like a normal running rate. You basically have always one sizable effect, and that is a very technical effect, accounting technical effect. When you acquire a company in the first 6 months or so, you have to look at how you allocate the purchase price of that company to the various balance sheet lines. And so you have to allocate to fixed assets, to inventories, to intangible assets, and then at the end you have a kind of leftover, and that we call goodwill. And in that part, normally the value of the inventories go up in that allocation part. And that step up of inventory valuation, that is the main element in the 15 million, and that is the effect out of the Tortuga acquisition. So that single effect happened for all the acquisitions at one moment in time, but it's not like a quarterly run rate or whatsoever. That's the main thing there. On the working capital, yes, if you compare with end of last year, we have a significant increase of working capital, also more than normal. There is normally an increase. End of year is usually the lowest point in time in the year of working capital, and then it goes up in the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and then comes down again. But the increase is higher than normal, so I, as CFO, I'm also not happy with the performance there, and we need to push there to get working capital down. In Q3 as such, working capital slightly came down, but not significantly, and that's not good enough. So we need to get to lower working capital. We now reported 23.7% of sales. Our expectation for end of year is somewhere around 21% of sales. So we expect that it will come down, but it is higher than beginning of the year.
Do you have an explanation for that?
Yeah, partly, as I say, it's seasonal. And partly, I think it's also, it has to do with special effects sometimes. For example, we had a maintenance stop of our larger factories in nutrition, and that is a 6-week stop. So before that stop, you build up inventory to have enough material over that period where you do not produce. And some of it is also seasonal effects. So I think it just needs a bit more focus. But you will always have these kinds of swings. You will have maintenance stops, and you will have to build inventory before the stop. These things will always be there. And sometimes
okay.
They hit quarter end, and sometimes they are not so visible because they are inside a quarter.
Yeah. Thank you.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have for this call. I hand back to Rolf Dieter to give his closing remarks.
Yeah, thank you for participating in the call, and thanks for your questions. I just want to summarize that we really maintain our positive momentum in challenging environment, as we see it in GDP everywhere and some of the nutrition things we discussed. Our EBITDA totally up by 27% and also up in every single business group and business segment. We remain focused for now on integration of our acquisitions and delivery of the synergies, so delivering the reasons why we bought these companies, together with our profit improvement program. That will help improve our returns. The current trading conditions, as we discussed, are similar to those which we saw at the end of Q3, so continuing in Q4, and in the currency exchange rates, if you look at the US dollar versus euro, October even was worse than what we had seen in September and the months before. Now, in the last days, it looks little bit better. But anyway, nevertheless, we are on track to deliver a significant increase in EBITDA for the full year, and therefore did not change our outlook, which we published at the Capital Markets Day end of September. And with that, I want to thank you again and talk to you soon or at the next quarter end again.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the DSM conference call. Thank you for attending. You may now disconnect your line. Have a nice day.